Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 23rd of June, 2020. On the podcast today, Clive Beattie, acting CEO of On The Market, OTMP, sticker there, and Clive discusses the extension to their payment support initiative and the record delivery of leads to advertisers from their site. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, explains how Bitcoin is becoming increasingly correlated to the S&P 500 and also talks about sports bettor, now day trader sensationalist, Dave Portnoy. Also on the podcast, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see a lot of other content, including articles on Live Company Group. There's one there on i3 Energy. There's also one there on The Market and Totally. And also, right there on the front page, check out our COVID-19 index. Companies at the moment, let's have a look at these. The top one at the moment is Fusion Antibodies, rising 8%. And the one falling at the moment at the bottom is Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals, down 7.3% to 5.6 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Clive Beattie, Acting Chief Executive Officer of On The Market, and that's OTMP ticker. Clive, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Nice to be here.
Yeah, and you've just released a bit of an update about the agent support package extension and record leads. So we'll dig into that and we'll look at the numbers in a bit. Before we do, as always, if someone's sitting right here now and thinking, On The Market, that sounds familiar. What's that about? But not quite sure. Just give them a summary, Clive, if you could. What is On The Market all about, please?
Yes, very quickly, Justin. On The Market is a UK property portal. So you go to onthemarket.com and we advertise properties on behalf of, well, ultimately vendors and landlords, but agents list their properties for their clients, new homes developers. And we display those on the portal. And if you're looking to buy or rent a property, you can search on our portal, find the property, and through us, get in touch with the agent or new home developer and then progress from there.
Yeah, and I think one of your strengths, like I said, I added the app when I heard the advert that you often get properties 24 hours ahead of other sort of portals. I thought, I'll give it a try. I didn't know if it's true or not, but it is true. And I have evidence on Friday. I had two emails, one from you, one from Rightmove. Yours was about 2.5-3 hours ahead of Rightmove. Same property. And when you're often looking for a property, that's, you know, you constantly look at these lists and there's no new sort of properties on there and you're waiting for the next one to be added. And so that's sort of 2-3 hours, even that's all you need is a head start, isn't it, really?
Well, I think that's very helpful. And as a potential buyer, you want to see the property as soon as possible. You're absolutely right. I mean, actually, that one wouldn't have been, interestingly, what we call new and exclusive, where some of our agents upload for us 24 hours or more. So you can imagine if you've got a day or more in advance of the others, you know, that makes a big difference. And so that's one of the attractions, I think, to the consumers who do use our portal, is that they can see properties first. And we have thousands of those a month. that we get before the others.
Absolutely. It's that thing, tempting just to wait for that perfect property to come through, and it's a race to, you know, call the agent and say, you know, give me a booking, I want to see that. So, okay, let's go into the news today. So, a two-month extension. What's all this about, Clive, please?
Yeah, so back in March when the COVID crisis struck and the markets essentially shut for agents when the lockdown was in force, we put in place then a three-month discounted offer to help them through, because obviously agents live or die on the cash flows from transactions happening. And when those don't happen, obviously they were facing very challenging times. You know, we've always been an agent-backed portal. We're 65% owned by agents as shareholders. So we're very closely aligned with them. And we thought it was the right thing to do to support them. We obviously took some cost reduction measures to protect ourselves and conserve our cash position. But that has now rolled through. We've seen a relaxation in the by the government of some of the strictest measures of lockdown, and that has seen the markets reopen. But as you'll appreciate, property markets take a little while to, you know, for transactions to complete, more so on the sales and the letting side. But nonetheless, the agents have seen reopenings. It's been very active for them, lots of demand and interest. But at the same time, cash doesn't flow immediately. So again, what we've done this morning is just extend our discount. And the discount will continue in full at the 33% we offered until the 26th of August. And then it will reduce to 20% through to the 25th of September. And again, you know, we think that's the right thing to do. What we'll be doing alongside that, as we start to see that phase out, as we start to see the markets reopen and you know, stabilize with transactions going through, we will, of course, also start to spend more ourselves on agent support through customer service, through advertising and so forth. So we've got to balance those two, and that's what we'll be doing in the couple of months ahead of us.
Yeah, and you mentioned there you've, as of the 31st of May, you had net cash of 8.8 million, which is a decent chunk there, of course. And the thing is, you say, there's no lack of demand, because in this RNS today, you talk about the lead to advisors, and just your traffic is doing very well at the moment, isn't it?
Absolutely, and that's very encouraging, and particularly for us, because you know, we're relatively new in the portals world as a challenger portal. We were introduced to bring competition into the portals marketplace, and actually, that, you know, those record leads, you know, 2 weeks of back-to-back record leads at 430,000, 440,000. The fact that we're getting, you know, visits and traffic at 6 million a week, you know, above where we were pre-COVID when we were actually marketing, and we haven't really spent much on marketing for 2.5 to 3 months now. But that says to me that the consumers that are actually active at the moment in the property markets are very engaged with our portal, both because of the quality of the content and the range of content, things like the new and exclusive and the ability to see things first. But I think also, you know, as we've grown, you know, certainly some of the others and the market leader has seen a decrease in agency offices. And I think that says to consumers that actually they do need to now look. Most people buying a house or letting a house or living in a house, you want to make sure you see all the potential properties there. And I think you can't do that anymore on any single site. You have to see, you know, at least two, you know, possibly three of the leading portals you'll be looking at to make sure you see all the properties. And I think that brings competition in, because if I'm a vendor or a landlord or an agent acting for them, if I know that all the consumers are looking on at least two or three of the sites, actually, I can then choose. It doesn't matter which I'm on, as long as I'm on one or two, and it matters less and less which ones. I know that I'll get my property in front of the genuinely interested buyers, and I know that that property will sell, you know, assuming all pricing and all other things are in the right order. So for me, that, you know, that's a very positive statement. That level of engagement, which we've seen increase, you know, substantially over the last year or so, shows to me that actually the markets are becoming more competitive. And that will benefit agents, and you know, they'll be able to start to make, you know, choices about where they list their stock.
Yeah, like you say there, I'll try to repeat that, because when you think of, you've delivered over, what, 440,000 leads in the week commencing the 15th of June, this is on the back of a reduction in marketing. That's saying, right, it's working, isn't it? Because how are those people coming there? Is it word of mouth? How's that working?
Well, it's hard to know exactly where that would be the case. We're certainly seeing new people coming to site, and we're through word of mouth or just through the brand awareness that we've built over time. But I mean, remember now, we've been going for quite some time with a very high advertising spend. We've got very many people, about 1.5 million people registered for alerts, and much the way, Justin, you said you had that property alert and you got the properties through. But all those people are getting emails from us when new properties come to market that meet their criteria. and they're coming back to the site or through the agents from those. Clearly, we have a lot more organic traffic. You know, people just have the app downloaded now and are looking at our app. They're going directly to onthemarket.com on the website to see the properties. So all that traffic, you know, in the early days, we were using a lot of pay-per-click to drive traffic to the site. Mm. But now there's so much more engagement. And when consumers come, they see so many more properties that actually it just brings them back organically.
Yeah. And as far as I know, you know, most companies at the moment are saying they're not giving any forward guidance. You can't tell what will happen to the economy once we are fully open back up. But I mean, like I said, the demand looks very good. I mean, is anyone forecasting that how the housing market will react to the opening back up? Will it just bounce back, or is it a long time? Does anyone know?
Well, I think the views diverge, actually. But generally, I think, you know, certainly at the moment, activity is very high, demand is very strong. And, you know, we are seeing, and it's not just that there was a backlog that built up and then stopped when the lockdown happened. Mm. You know, I think people are starting to make lifestyle choices. You know, people are looking for larger properties, properties with gardens, properties perhaps in more rural areas. So there's a range of things that people, you know, drive people to look to move. And that can even happen, you know, some people will comment that they're worried that where things will go as the government support measures, furlough scheme and so forth, start to be unwound. Mm. But even those sorts of things, if there is, you know, unemployment, that can drive people downsizing, people looking to remortgage. So there's always activity going on.
Yeah.
You know, really what was most challenging for the agents is the lockdown when, bluntly, there was no activity, because no activity equals no fees.
Yeah.
You know, the vast majority of agency fees are paid on completion of a transaction. So as long as I think there's some activity going on, and at the moment, as I say, it's a very high level, you know, that's encouraging for agents.
Yeah, exactly. But I suppose it could have actually helped you guys, couldn't it? Because whereas people may have driven to their local estate agents, maybe, or just driven around to see if any house for sale in certain areas and certain maybe school boundaries, they couldn't leave their house, then all they can do is search online. So that's probably quite a good thing, isn't it, for you guys?
It possibly is. But I think actually, you know, the statistics will show that most people, you know, even pre-COVID, first engage in their search through the portals nowadays. Mm-hmm. A lot of the movement has gone on to that digital side. But that doesn't mean that they then, you know, obviously through us, they would then see a property they're interested in and contact that agent. And at that point, assuming no restrictions, they'd obviously be in touch with the agent. They'd be arranging viewings and so forth. So, you know, we are, and all the portals are just a conduit to present properties to interested buyers for them to then get in contact with the agent, and the agent takes it from there. So, you know, the agency side is still very important. It's the agent that obviously negotiation includes the deal, does all the work on that side. You know, we are just advertising the properties that they have got the instructions for.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, Clive, well, as always, if you could, if someone's listening, likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, could you give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add On the Market to their watch list, please?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you know, the first is probably what we've just been discussing. The operational performance now is very strong. We do have a very high level of genuinely engaged consumers. We're creating a lot of leads for our advertisers. Ultimately, that is what the agents who are our customers pay us for. So, you know, now we're doing that, we can, you know, start to convert our revenues. We did bring people on for free to start with, and we're converting them onto fee-paying contracts. And that operational performance is obviously key to that. That's the first thing I'd say. The second, I think, is our differentiated proposition. I mentioned earlier, we're still 65% owned by agents. That stands very differently with the ownership structures of others in the industry. And I think that sets us apart because, you know, we have a commitment to agents that we will only have fair listing fees and fair price increases. But nevertheless, we can have a very sustainable business based on that. And that business, or that platform, will allow us to develop other products and services to push through that very wide distribution platform. And that's much more what we intend to do in the medium term, is to differentiate our offering and increasingly widen the offering in terms of the products and services, rather than just present a listing service. So I think those, you know, if I can count that as the third reason, which is, you know, the medium term potential to use that platform for widening our product offering. You know, I think that's a very attractive medium-term growth for us.
Excellent stuff. Clive, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He is the writer, the author, the designer, the creator of The Crypto Trader, How Anyone Can Make Money Trading Bitcoin and Other Cryptocurrencies.
Mm.
real life winning trades and strategies, real life, as opposed to what made up stuff.
you've always got a bone to pick, haven't you? The publishers insisted on the real life bit being put on the cover because they said it differentiated me from many other from financial authors and commentators who just don't trade. You know, a lot of them don't trade their own money. They just teach other people, you know.
So some people, that little round circle at the top there above the main title, which is real life winning trades, winnings in big, winning trades and strategies, opposed to made up winning trades and strategies.
Or real life losing trades.
Yeah, yeah, pretend, that'd be good, pretend winning trades and strategies. You can write whatever you want, really, can you? In small print, people don't read it. Glenn, what's happening? Should we start off with Bitcoin?
I'd rather not. even though that is
that's your main sell, isn't it, really, your crypto, that's your brand.
All right, well, the story, okay, yeah, like, all right, go on then. It's just I had something to get off my chest, but I'll do that let's start with Bitcoin. You're right,
let's tease with the getting off my chest bit. That's good, we'll tease that. Wait, don't tune out now, everyone. Glenn's got something to get off his chest, and it's not a brassiere.
We've talked in previous weeks about the correlation between Bitcoin and stocks.
That's going to fly now. Bitcoin's going to fly now. I can tell. It's going to fly. It's going to break 10,000 massively with a surge.
I mean, it does look that way, right? You know, from a traditional kind of charting perspective, it really does look like it's been in this kind of triangle-shaped formation since the peak in late 2017. You can draw a nice straight line all the way down from the peak, all the way across a couple of the other peaks, down to where we are now. And it just looks like, you know, that is the resistance line. And once we break through it, and we're right next to it now, once we break through it, as you say, we're going to fly. But one thing gives me pause, Justin, okay? Pause. And that is the correlation between Bitcoin and stocks, which I've got it charted on and I sort of keep that chart up all day to track the progress of the correlation. And my Lord, it is so close. Bitcoin and stocks have been basically following the same path, more or less, since the crash began in February.
What index are you looking at? The S&P?
The S&P, the US S&P 500 against Bitcoin. If you chart them on the same chart together, you'll see that, sometimes the lines diverge a little bit by like a few percent here and there for, say, a week, maybe two at most, but then they can't come back together. And actually, we're now at a point where Bitcoin and stocks, Bitcoin and the S&P 500 have fallen by approximately the same amount, round about, let me find a good starting point. Since the beginning of March, they have both risen by about 2%. Mm-hmm. Or since the beginning of the crash is probably more useful, they've both fallen by just a couple of percent. But the point is, since the crash sort of got underway and they started correlating closely together, which happened round about the beginning of March, they've just been following the same path most of the time. As I say, they diverge a little bit sometimes and then come back together. Right now, they are just perfectly in sync. They're doing almost the same things hour by hour. And so the problem there, to cut a long story short, is you're saying Bitcoin's going to fly. But if Bitcoin's going to fly, then there are only two things that can happen there. Either Bitcoin and stocks become completely decorrelated, in which case that flying would seem even more significant.
Uncorrelated or decorrelated?
Decoupled, I suppose people usually say. If they decouple, then and Bitcoin starts whooshing upwards, then yes, that would be an extremely strong sign that Bitcoin has found its feet and is having a really proper breakout. That would be a really major sign. Problematic from a trading point of view, because I won't know until it's actually happened, if you see what I mean. It's like, until the decoupling has occurred, then I'm not going to know that the decoupling is going to occur, if you see what I mean. So it's like, it's hard one to take advantage of, hard to kind of get the balls to put enough money into Bitcoin as the breakout begins, because I won't know until the breakout is well underway whether or not this decoupling is real or not. Because what what really worries me is if the decoupling doesn't happen and Bitcoin and stocks continue to move in sync, then Bitcoin might not have a strong breakout from this resistance through the resistance line. It might just carry on trickling its way upwards along with stocks, because of course Bitcoin is generally, over historically, it's been much, much more volatile than shares, right? So if they're now moving in sync, what's happening is Bitcoin is just less volatile. It's moving more slowly. Stocks is moving in line with stocks, which move relatively slowly. And so stocks, are we expecting stocks to suddenly go through the roof by 20 to 50% within a few days? Because those are the kind of moves you generally expect when you get a big breakout with Bitcoin. I can't really see that happening in stocks, because it just, you know, practically never happens that way with shares. So I guess what I'm saying is, as long as the two of them
saying,
are tracking,
what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying as long as the two of them are tracking each other.
Just repeat that thing all over again. To start from the start. Oh, basically, you're just saying it's taken you a long time to say. I think it's correlated to the S&P. And if S&P
But I'm saying more than that, Justin. But
maybe it's not.
What I say goes so much deeper. What I'm trying to say is, as long as the two are moving together, Bitcoin isn't being Bitcoin. It's not doing its usual thing of having breakouts of 50% within a few hours or 30% within a few hours.
Can't you just ignore the S&P and just do, you know, just use the trading signals and go with Bitcoin on its own?
Because they've been moving so closely together since March. If you chart them together on a chart, you'll see what I mean, and you'll think, my God, they really are
so closely. Which one's the leading factor there? Which one is it? Stocks are leading.
There has to be stocks, because, you know, Bitcoin is a far smaller market, isn't it?
Trade the S&P then.
Trade the S&P. Yeah, but like I say, You said yourself, Bitcoin looks from a charting perspective like it's on the brink of a massive breakout followed by a huge bull market.
Hang on a sec. You seem lost for a trading idea here.
I'm not happy.
Essentially, you're sitting on the sidelines, yeah?
Sorry, just taking a swig of water
gin. You just have a swig of gin.
Yes, I'm on the sidelines.
Is this what Bitcoin has done to you, Glenn? It's not even midday here, and you're swigging away on the vodka and the gin.
The glass is clear because it's got water in it, yeah. Okay? The liquid is just water.
You've got two glasses in front of you. On the left is gin, on the right is vodka, and it's one's the S&P, one's Bitcoin. I'll go long this. Short, I'll pour the gin into the vodka, I'll short the S&P, and I go long the Bitcoin again.
A strap.
Yeah, so there's no clear trend here, is there?
Essentially, I'm torn, because, you know, normally my life has been relatively straightforward. You know, I've written a book about how you can make money trading cryptocurrencies based on time-honored principles of classical charting, and, you know, those principles usually work, right?
Maybe that bubble.
They usually apply in every other part of history. Trade, you know, it works. But now everything's gone tits up, frankly, hasn't it? Because of coronavirus, it's making all weird things happen, traditional ways of looking at things are not working the way they should.
I think you should have in brackets in that, but real-life winning trades and strategies, as long as there's a clear trend.
As long as there's no global pandemic.
If not, then sit back, drink gin and vodka for a while.
Yeah. But it's true. If there is no clear trend, you can't trade. You know, them's the rules. And that's how you make your money, is not just by trading when there is a decent trend, but also by, as you say, not trading at all when there isn't a decent trend. Because that's how most traders lose their money, is by trading when there's sod all going on and they're trading anyway.
Up and down, you know, cuts them out, hits their stops the whole time. You're a trend follower. And does that go for your clothes as well, Glenn, and your hairstyle?
Oh Lord, yes.
Yes.
I'm sharp.
What's in these days? Flares or
No. some women are wearing a kind of baggy trousers now.
Is that what you're wearing? Why are you asking about women for? Are we wearing women's trends? There we are. It's all love and fair. It's all game. You know,
it's just a middle-aged friend turned up the other day wearing very baggy trousers, and me and my wife were just a bit freaked out. We're like, what is she wearing?
Yeah.
But then I realised, that's what the young girl's wearing nowadays. So
I suppose that's to aid them.
do that thing.
Yeah, that's to aid them with social distancing, probably. Just really baggy trousers so no one can get close to you, you know, because it just seems like you're invading their personal space. But you're not actually, because it's very baggy trousers.
You just have to do a twirl and the bagging bit flares out and keeps people at a distance, yeah.
Right, so if that wasn't getting stuff off your chest, because it seems like you're quite wound up by the...
I was, but there's something even more... that I need to get off my chest.
I can handle that.
Right.
And that was supposed to be the first bit, was supposed to be the quite calm bit, quite recent, just discussion on Bitcoin. And are now you want, maybe there's a contrarian play here. Maybe it's not as, it doesn't get you goat as much. So what's the
issue? Well, it's kind of linked, kind of. Are you familiar with the Dave Portnoy phenomenon?
No.
Here we go.
Who?
Yeah, who indeed? Have you heard of, or his pseudonym, Davy Day Trader? So have you come across that on Twitter?
David Portnoy is an American internet celebrity, blogger and founder of satirical sports and pop culture blog Barstool Sports.
That's right. So what he is, and he's a phenomenon in America now, and this is why I want to talk about him and get it off my chest, because what we're seeing is one of those classic bubble phenomena that occur, you know, every few years, maybe every 5 to 10 years, you get, you know, like we had during the dot-com bubble, we had all kinds of crazy things going on, people suddenly getting rich out of nowhere. During the Bitcoin boom, obviously, you heard of similar things happening. And now, this is another kind of bubble sign. Dave Portnoy, the founder of Barstool Sports, is basically a professional sports bettor, or more to the point, a social media guy with millions of followers, who talked about sports betting. But of course, sports stopped, right, for coronavirus. Yeah. So what did he do? He decided to get into stocks and become a day trader. And a lot of people in America were doing the same thing at the same time, partly because they weren't able to bet on sports, and partly because of brokerages like Robinhood. You might have heard of Robinhood. Is a fee-free brokerage, so they loved the idea. They didn't have to pay fees, and tons of people, including Dave, who'd never traded shares, suddenly started doing it during the coronavirus thing. And Dave has become a massive phenomenon. He famously said that let me find his tweet from the beginning of June or from middle of June. He says, "I'm sure Warren Buffett is a great guy, but when it comes to stocks, he's washed up. I'm the captain now." Yeah. And Day Trader, as I say, has got millions of followers who listen and hang on his every word. He's a complete novice, but he's making an absolute ton of money because his mantra is stocks only go up. Have you ever heard of anything more hubristic, anything more kind of like the top of a market than somebody who writes on a whiteboard behind their head whenever they're doing, he does live streams at his computer at the close every single day, and he has behind his head, stocks only go up, and he sits there at the computer live streaming while he's going, come on Amazon, come on, you go for it, oh that's another 30 grand I've made. And so, you know, the guy is making a ton of money by taking a long-only perspective.
Okay, good. So as well, he's doing well. That's good. You've got to be that extreme though to get, you know, if to get any likes and follows, you've got, you know, like that. Those are the people. That's what social media is about, isn't it? It's extremes that gets the attention. If you're quite sensible and measured, you don't get the followers. You know, but you get some followers, of course, because people say, there are people that like this. But there are people who like people who go to extremes and they get success or get results via those extremes, you know?
So then what happens after that, generally?
It doesn't matter because he's made enough money anyway. He's not stupid. He's to the point where he banks his profit. And unless he goes all in on one trade, which I doubt he does, doesn't matter. He's done well.
Yeah, but if your mantra is stocks only go up, all right, okay. This
until
might not
they
be
don't.
The perfect
yeah,
example
people,
because
people love that.
He
so
is
what,
going
what,
to stop.
Hang on,
he's
what are you doing,
CNBC? He's going to stop when sports start again. So you're right. He might actually be able to bank his profit because he literally plans to give up day trading
people,
when sports betting comes back online.
People like that who go extreme, right? They get their best reaction, their best interaction, their best reach is gained when they're wrong. And then people go, you know, put the finger there. They love that. And then what do you say? I was wrong there, actually. And he'll get loads of interaction. So it's like, you know...
He'll get a lot of her interaction, but he'll lose his reputation for being, moment, everything he touches turns to gold.
He's making six-figure... Well, if he's making six-figure sums a day, he's not going to lose it all, is he? I'm assuming he's...
Well, if the market crashed and he only believes that stocks go up and he buys dips constantly, which is what he does, he'll keep buying the dips all the way down into a crash, won't he?
Surely he'll have enough stop loss in there, something. He won't bet it all on them.
Oh, he has no stop loss. You're forgetting, this guy's only just started trading. He doesn't know anything about trading, ultimately. He's just making it up as it goes along. All he knows is that stocks go up and he makes money, and every time they go down a bit, he's like, oh, this is an opportunity to buy some more. It'll go up more. Okay, that obviously holds true.
If he's making money in sports betting, he can make money in stocks. If you can make money in sports betting, that's a lot harder. Odds are stacked against you all the time. You can make money in stocks. And you know, like I said, the guy is not dull. He's not stupid. Maybe the people who are following him are, but he's not.
I'm sure he's not.
He'll be fine. You know, he'll make a lot of money out of it. Then in the meantime, he's picking up followers left, right, and centre. Like, you know, there's a couple of people now listening to the podcast who've learned about him who hadn't before.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see if/when a market crash happens, if he is still in the market and hasn't gone back to his sports betting, then it'll be interesting to see whether he keeps buying all the way down or whether he does eventually, as you say, have some kind of mental stop loss where he goes, well, that's enough of that. I've lost enough money now. He's got so much money riding on this, millions of dollars now, that in the case of a market crash, he could lose an absolute fortune very, very quickly if... But as you say, maybe he is smarter than I'm giving him credit.
All you need to do then, if you get 1.5 million followers on Twitter, all you need to do then is say, right, I'm going to post my thoughts about this on YouTube, and you'll just get monetized that. Or you just get a newsletter or something, whatever. With that kind of following, you monetize it, can't you?
Well, you can do all kinds of things to make money, but if he's losing millions in the stock market, which may or may not happen, then that could, wipe out any little revenues he gets from YouTube, and they are relatively little.
He's not betting the farm, is he, every day? I'm sure he's like...
I think he is, because he makes or loses hundreds of thousands of dollars. In fact, I think there was a day a couple of weeks ago where he lost $640,000, I think it said.
People love that, don't they? They love watching guys like that, you know, putting it all on the line.
Yeah,
He should by now set up a YouTube channel and be doing it there, because at least then he's getting revenue for every video he posts. Because with that kind of following, you can get a decent kind of revenue come off that, you know.
He must have a YouTube as well. I'll have to check it out. But he must be on every platform, surely. He's a big cheese now in the world of finance.
Fastsports.com. Let's have a look. So,
he's got day trader.
Yeah, but like I said, he's got adverts on there, isn't he? And he's got a podcast, hasn't he? And he's on.
Yeah, he's making money. He's got all kinds of revenue streams.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I'm
interested in talking about that. I want to talk about.
He's just lying about how much he trades. I mean, it doesn't matter, as long as he's attracting people to his site. And like, he's getting paid, you know.
All right, but anyway, the point remains. The reason I brought this up and wanted to have a. A bit of a let it out of my system is because it makes me extremely nervous because, as I say, this is the kind of phenomenon that you usually find at the very top of a market. Yep. When all the retail traders who've never traded before suddenly start opening up brokerage accounts, buying stocks like crazy, thinking that it's impossible to lose, all of that stuff. Me and you, Justin, we've been around. We've seen all that stuff over and over again during the time that we've been trading. So, once again, it's signaling to me a major top, a major market top. But, I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows the future. And it's a worrying time for somebody who's not in the market very much like myself, who's mainly on the sidelines. I've got a few investments, a few stocks. I do this and that. But mainly my money is on the sidelines. And, obviously it terrifies me, the thought that this market could go a lot higher before it crashes, because that sometimes happens too, doesn't it? Just because Dave Portnoy's come along and is making being brash and making a lot of noise right now doesn't mean this is the exact top of the market. It could go a lot higher before something sparks a big crash. And, I'm going to have the FOMO. I'm going to have the fear of missing out throughout that rise.
That's what it is. If it's sensible, sort of measured people who know this is a bit insane. I've had fear of missing out, and I keep saying that until a lot more of those bears become bulls, we're not going to have a crash again because there's too much money sitting on the sidelines.
It's true. There's a lot of institutional money on the sidelines, and you know, people who talk like me who say, but you know, they run funds, fund managers, that kind of thing. But they talk like me in the sense that they say, this is crazy, this is ridiculous, that it's out of tune with the fundamentals. But our money is as much on the sidelines as possible, or we've put all our money in treasury bonds, or you know, those kind of attitudes.
It's
like
bargain,
you say,
so.
All
stop,
the institutional
stop.
Money is on, or a lot of it is on the sidelines, which is worrying in itself, because usually during a classic market top, the institutional money would already be in there, it would all be locked in there, and then the retail money comes on top. But this time we have this really weird situation because of the crash in March, where a lot of the institutions pull their money out of stocks, and then suddenly people who've never traded before, just like Joe Schmo, gets in and he's making all the profit instead.
Yeah, but do you know what? They're getting it right though. Do you know why? The institution that's in the market, the biggest institution, is the Fed. And we all think that, in fact, you know, institutional investors are in, but the Fed's in there to the tune of trillions. It's like, literally, they're going to backstop the market all the way up, pretty much. So I don't know. Until we'll have volatility. Once there's a disconnect between, when the Fed's done enough, they think, you have that taper trend kind of thing where, you know, there's no more support for companies because they think this should be getting back to the real economy now, should be taken over. You'd have that kind of fallout. But again, the financial fallout hasn't started yet. We haven't seen the problem. It's Q3, we know it's a write-off. Q2 is a write-off. Q3, that's more telling. And, you know, so we won't get that for another six months. So,
It's worth mentioning, in case you haven't seen it, that there's been a lot of writing down of debt, a lot of paying off of debt in the United States, because one of the big bubbles that everybody's been worried about for years is the private debt bubble in the United States in particular, but actually all over the world, but particularly in the United States, you know, all ordinary people all massively mortgaged to the hilt again, and you know, car loans and student loans and all the rest of it. Well, actually, while they've been sitting in lockdown, they've been paying off a lot of that debt because there just, I guess, hasn't been that much money to many things to spend their money on. Plus, they're getting stimulus checks given directly to them by the American government. And so they've been able to pay down some
that's
of that debt. So
actually,
that might be taking some of the air out of the bubble. It could be good for the economy. Yeah.
And actually, in fact, that you can't ignore the worry about, you know, people saying this is going to be the biggest recession ever. The 1930s, maybe that has meant people have, you know, pulled their belt and tightened their belt a bit and said, oh, let's get rid of that debt while we get the money. So,
so maybe the bubble can just slowly deflate rather than popping, in other words. Yeah,
exactly. And then the Fed will put a sticky plaster on it and pump it back up again. That's fine. It comes down to just individual stocks, though. I'm an individual stock picker. So, I mean, I've been paying too much attention to the indices, really, when actually there's plenty of bargains out there if you look
around. It's true. I'm doing the same as you, and you're right.
Just be conservative.
If I was following my own rules properly, the rules that I set out in my book and said you should always follow these rules, if I were following them properly, then I would be making money on this stock, that stock, and the other stock. Because as you say, there are plenty that have been just, you know, breaking out all over the place and doing lots of nice things. But instead, like you, I've become rather fixated on the bigger picture. And as a result, I'm, you know, ever since coronavirus started, basically, it kind of knocked me for six, as it did most investors, because it's something that we've never come across before. It's a completely unprecedented situation for traders and investors. And so I kind of thought, right, normal rules go out the window. I'm not going to just buy the lovely breakout stocks like I normally do. I think it's too dangerous. But as a result, yeah, I've missed out on a lot of nice breakouts on individual stocks. I feel a little bit silly about that. But at the same time, like I've said in previous weeks, it terrifies me that you could just wake up one morning and the stock market's fallen 30%. You know, that's something that could happen, and it could happen overnight while we're asleep. So you don't get a chance to kind of sell off your stocks because, the British market's not open. That is far from an unexpected situation in this environment.
Well, I think lesson 9 or lesson 10 of my 10 lessons I've learned from investing in small cap stocks was making up good rules is a good thing in the light of day. Things you've learned that you've evolved with and putting good rules in place is one thing. Actually sticking to them is another thing, and that's one of the hardest things to do. Is actually having rules. It's not hard to make up the rules. We all know the sensible rules pretty much. You can make them up and write them down, but sticking to them is the hard bit. The discipline to stick to your rules.
It is.
Emotion takes over.
It is exactly. I've stuck to them most of my trading career, but not all of it. You know, so I'm human. Sometimes I err from the straight path of righteousness.
Glenn Human. Okay.
I'm only human.
Glenn, thanks a lot, but we've got to go. And I'll speak you next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, down 11% to 0.36. At four, Cimec Atlantis Energy, up 31.8% to 14.5. At three, it's on the market, up 3.8% to 81.5 pence. At two, Totally PLC, up 3.6%, 21.5. And at one, UK Oil and Gas, it's up 19% to 0.28 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Angus Energy, further repayment of Riverfort loan facility. At four, Centamin, 2019 sustainability report. At three, Live Company Group, change of advisor. At two, Jangada Mines, updated corporate presentation. And at one, Blue Star Capital, Leaf Mobile Update, and that's up 2.7% to 0.19 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.